Hello and welcome to the All About Symbian Insight podcast. My name's Ewan Spence and I should be your host for the next delightful 30 minutes. Delightful for you listening as you get all the information about what's been happening in the Symbian world and the smartphone world. Slightly less delightful for Rafe Blanford, who's also joining me as he's sitting there over the libel and tort laws of England and Wales. Good morning, Rafe.
Good morning, Ewan.
And David, I don't know, is it going to be enjoyable for you?
Oh, it's always enjoyable for me, Ewan.
Oh, David Gilson there doing his best to make sure I don't throw him a nasty question. Interesting week. We're going to take a little look at the news, what we've been doing here as a team. Steve is still away enjoying the sights and sounds of Middle England, and we're going to have a bundle of reader questions as well. You can contribute to the podcast. You can leave your comments back on the website, www.allaboutsymbian.com. You get in touch with us through Twitter at AAS, and the individual team members' Twitter names are surely well known to you now. But let's first of all start off with a little bit of the news, and I have to like this one here. Angry Birds, it's a game that's very popular on the iPhone. It's also available for the N900 as and has been voted on the Nokia Conversations blog as their best game. And what I loved about this was it wasn't even in Nokia's shortlist, it was a write-in candidate winner. I suspect because it's on the N900 and not on Symbian. The rest of the games were Symbian. Rafe, perhaps you can talk a little bit about the coding issues on this one. Angry Birds is coming to Symbian, but not until the N8 and the Symbian 3 devices. Now, there's a specific reason for that, isn't there?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And basically, this is a graphic-intensive game, and it needs a sort of extra power of a graphics coprocessor, which is, of course, in devices like the N900 and also the N8. Angry Birds, as most people probably know, has also been very popular on the iPhone platform, and it's also, I understand, coming to Android. I think it's just arrived on Android and will be on WebOS as well. It's had millions of downloads, and I understand the revenue from this is sort of approaching around the $10 million mark. So incredibly impressive for a mobile game. And Angry Birds is developed by Rovio Studios out of Finland and sort of marketed or published by Click Gamer. So yes, the main reason this isn't on the current Symbian phones is purely for graphical reasons. And this has been something that perhaps has been holding back the gaming on Symbian devices recently. They just don't have the same graphical prowess as some of their competitors. And that really speaks to two things, one of which is maybe the manufacturers choosing not to have the specifications absolutely up to date in terms of chipsets, but it's really because Symbian is quite capable of running on sort of lower resources, on less powerful hardware. There hasn't been the need to throw these more powerful components at it, things like the iPhone 4 and some of the higher end Android devices, in order to achieve the performance that people expect. They do need the higher end chipsets. And of course, it's also around Nokia, not having so many devices in the high end of the market as it waits for the transition to Symbian 3. But I think going forward, we will see sort of a graphics coprocessor, or at least more powerful graphics, become more standard on Symbian. One of the big things about Symbian 3 that isn't very much talked about is the fact that the graphical architecture has been completely rewritten from the ground up. It means it's more power efficient, but it also means the actual capabilities of the platform are significantly improved. And I think that will be borne out both in applications, but probably most notably for the end users in terms of games, and maybe a little bit in terms of things like transition and theme effects within the operating system itself.
And it's also important because Angry Birds, it's a sort of title where people would go into a gaming store and say, does it play Angry Birds? Not, in the old days, it would be, does it have email? Can you do FTP on it? Does it have a VT100 terminal client emulator? Nowadays, does it have Angry Birds? Does it have, New McLeod always says, it's got to have Dropbox as a third-party application. But applications can sell phones, and the fact that Angry Birds is on there and is in the advertising will mean people go, that must be a modern phone, it's doing something modern.
Yeah, no, I'm wary of saying individual applications sell phones, but I think collectively it's clear that consumers have an expectation. I would say this really is only at the high end of the market at the moment, but I think over the next 2-3 years, it will become, it will, as an explanation, it will move down the market, just as any other technology has. GPS is a great example of that. People expect to get GPS in mid-tier phones now, to a large extent at least. And while I wouldn't identify specific applications necessarily, or indeed services, because it varies greatly from market to market, yes, it's this kind of graphic richness that, you know, it looks good in the adverts. So when you're previewing it, and people expect to see this kind of thing on the high-end devices, and, you know, and in a certain target market, you know, those who are particularly aware of games and stuff on other phones, you know, those who, if you're like technically aware, who follow these things closely, yes, you know, they might be going, well, I'm going to choose my phone because it's got X, Y, and Z application in it. But I still feel, despite the sort of attention paid to them, that sort of relatively small proportion of the overall audience.
Right then. Now, as you said, Steve's not here, but babysitting his lovely Samsung device, David Gilson. David, you've picked up on the QT news very briefly, because I know Rafe wants to go into the nuts and bolts on how this is actually probably more important than Dropbox functionality on your phone. Tell us about QT on Samsung.
Okay, this firmware scene on the 8910 HD is progressing very well, actually. And there's a user called Fenil who has set up a one-click installer for Qt so that you can actually run Qt applications on the 8910, which is good news for people who have hacked the firmware so that they're not locked out of the new range of applications. And from that, I'll hand over to Riff.
Yeah, and David's quite right there. It's about the new range of applications. And while I think there's a limited number at the moment, most notably the ones from off-screen, I think Ewan reviewed Orange Wednesdays on the site a while back. I think Skype also has a certain number of Qt components in it. And I should say it's Qt, not Qt, which is for QuickTime. So I have to call it Qt to get the terminology right. And this is interesting, as I say, because it opens it up to the other Symbian phones. We had an announcement recently from the official sort of Qt blog that they would be supporting both Samsung and Sony Ericsson, but with a kind of unofficial support, if you like. It's now there a little bit quicker because the timeline on the Samsung thing wasn't quite sure. Sony Ericsson now has it. The reason there's a problem around this is because Qt as a runtime has to have signed capabilities, and it's to do with the security model of the phone to make sure software can't do anything nasty. And in this particular instance, Qt, because it's quite low level in terms of the integration, that's what happens when you're doing an abstracted language, it requires a kind of the sensitive capabilities that can only be signed for by the manufacturer, and that needs specific permission from Nokia, which can obviously give it to itself fairly easily, but also Samsung and Sony Ericsson to run on their own devices. And Qt have now received that sort of certificate, those permissions, and so future versions of Qt will be able to run on all Sony Ericsson and Samsung phones, in addition to all Nokia phones. So it just widens up the sort of availability for developers. And I think it's a good thing, particularly really for Sony Ericsson and Samsung users. It means developers, without making too much extra effort, will be able to support those devices as well. Of course, there's this whole question around how much support those two companies have for Symbian going forward. Samsung is probably the more doubtful of the two. Sony Ericsson has stated an intention of cutting down to two from its current three, which is Android, Symbian, and Windows Mobile. Android is pretty clearly going to be one of Sony Ericsson's choices. Between Windows Mobile or Windows Phone 7 and Symbian, the choice may be less clear-cut, but I suspect they will go with Symbian because they will want the range of devices and it's more attractive in its home market of Europe. But yes, it's significant just because it's important to keep you know, the platform elements, of which I would count Qt as one, as universal as possible. It's also obviously encouraging if other manufacturers come along with Symbian devices. Qt are clearly looking to aggressively support it across all devices.
There we go. Speaking of developers, another option has opened up for them this week. The Vodafone Mobile Clicks competition has returned. Last year's winners, Layar, providing an augmented reality experience, walked away with 100,000 euros to help them develop the company, and are doing great guns now. The 2010 edition has been announced. If you'd like to be involved, you need to be a resident in Portugal or the Netherlands, or the United Kingdom. Register your idea, just the idea. You don't need to have a fully formed program yet. They're looking for startups or young companies that are only up to 3 years old. And I shall just check the URL for you and get them all in there. What I liked about competitions like this is, unlike other competitions, it's like, oh, develop for a handset, and if you do a really good application, we'll give you a handset. Well, you know, any proper developer is actually going to go out and test it on the device first. But this is nice. I mean, it gives you working capital. They're not claiming the idea or asking for equity or anything. They are asking you straight to keep an eye on and not announce the idea until they've had the chance to announce it first. Rafe, do you think we're going to see another company as successful as Layer come out of the VodafoneMobileClicks.com competition this year?
It's always difficult to, you know, predict things like that, but it's a pretty attractive prize pool. And to sort of get a good partnership with Vodafone could be very important for any mobile company. So I'm sure it will attract some interesting entrants. And I should mention at this point that I'm actually going to be involved in judging the UK leg of the competition, because what happens is each of the Vodafone countries are going to submit a couple of companies towards the final, which will be taking place at the Picnic Conference in Amsterdam, which I think takes place in September. And the final winner will be announced there and the judging will be done there. But at least for the UK leg of the competition, in order to sort of cut it down to the number of entrants they need for that kind of final round of judging, I'm going to be taking place in the judging. And I think it's, you know, the usual things, looking out for innovation, things that have a successful business model, fresh ideas, something that's, you know, maybe not been done before. As is typical with these things, I think what's going to be most important is providing good explanatory material with whatever submission you make, because to make the lives of the judge as easier as possible. I think one of the things I always note when talking to startups is sometimes it's difficult to immediately translate someone's passion for a project into something that can be understood by someone who's maybe only got half an hour or an hour to look at a submission. So, you know, I'd encourage as many startups as possible to put some money in, some entrants in. After all, there's a decent prize pool. I think just as significant as that is the exposure you'll get. I know, having spoken to Lair about this last year, they said some of the exposure they got from this was invaluable. It kind of acted as capital of credibility. And I think winning competitions like this, it's often the networking you make rather than the prizes that you win. So if there's any startups listening to this podcast, you know, go and check out the site. I'm sure Ewan is now going to quote the URL for us.
I am. It's VodafoneMobileClicks.com. And Rafe's favourite chocolates are Giuliani. And his address is available on request with no connection whatsoever to his ability to judge the competition. Isn't that right, Rafe?
Well, I don't really like Giuliani chocolate, but... yes, it wouldn't have anything to do with how I judge the competition, absolutely.
That's why Rafe's judging and not anybody else. Right then, it's one of these interesting weeks where things are waiting to happen. So we've actually reached out to some of you out there listening to the podcast and following us on Twitter, said, is there anything you would like to ask the team here at the All About Symbian Insight podcast? And we've got a couple of questions coming back from them. Let's take some of them just now. I want to start off with a question from Mike Day 1983. It's very simple, this one. David, let me go to this one with you for this one. Versus, how much longer will Nokia make us wait for the N8? It's driving me insane.
Well, I think him and all of us as well. I would be surprised if it goes past August, because there's been so much hype about it now. I think if they leave it much longer, that the hype is, I think people are going to start losing interest, and they have had quite a long time to start to finesse and polish the firmware. So really, no later than August, I would, well, at least the end of August, I would hope. So I hope you're listening, Nokia. There's your deadline.
Well, it's an interesting one, this. And I think the official answer from Nokia is it will be ready when it's ready. But I do know that Nokia are paying particular attention to the quality of the N8, and they will not ship it unless it's absolutely ready in their eyes to do so. Now, clearly, there's some definition of what absolutely ready means, but I think we can be confident that it's going to be of a significantly higher standard than something like the N97, which was a bit of a disaster in that department in retrospect, and certainly with hindsight. At the time, it was maybe more difficult to pick out, but I think they'll be aiming for the sort of E-series-like quality at launch, and usually the E-series devices are very good. Just a sort of piece of data here, because it's worth saying that there is no official news from Nokia beyond a Q3 launch date, which means sometimes between now and the 30th of September. But I did spot this week that the N8 is now available for pre-order on the Nokia Italy website, and it's priced at €469. That's about £390, so roughly in line with the sort of €370 before taxes and subsidy price that Nokia announced at launch. But it does say that the availability of this is the end of September, so I suspect the N8 may, in terms of most people, creep into September, and of course the big shipments won't really start until October, but if you're desperate to get your hands on this, I suspect the best way to do it is going to be to pre-order it, because it's going to be very popular initially. And I would suggest if it's August, it will be the very end of August, and I suspect the review devices may just make August. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets pushed back into September, and certainly for the retail channels.
Certainly, I think if David was offering a price in the end of August, then I would be going long on that price. September is likely as well. They have a choice of either going early or going when it's more stable, and I think they're going to err on the side of stability here. They've already taken the punishment for announcing and having a long lead-in time, because that's how Nokia deal with the networks. They have to show networks. They have to show carriers. They can't just drop one phone out and everybody buy it. They have to hawk it around, which means they have to announce it before they hawk it round. That results in the long lead time. They've already taken the pain for it, so they might as well, you know, absorb that pain and use it for benefit and go with stability. But I want to stay with that and go with another question we had in. I'm really interested in hearing you guys debate about the impact quality has on user experience. Would you rather have a device as buggy as the N97 with the UI of the iPhone, or a device that looks like the N97 with almost perfect quality? It's a huge amount of subjectivity in this question, and I suspect in the answer, but Rafe, I'll give you first bite on that one.
So I'll try and keep this brief. I actually prefer the design of the N97 because I prefer hybrid devices, and so I would go with the N97 with almost perfect quality, which I suspect is a bit of a cheat. But I actually think quality has an enormous impact on user experience, because user experience to me is about how easy is it for someone to use a device, and anything that gets in the way of that is a bad thing. And I think while, you know, hardware is quite subjective and quite personal, software is perhaps less so, I would suggest. I think there is still an enormous amount of subjectivity in it, depending on what you are looking to do. I think, in general, Symbian is probably a more sophisticated platform, and at least Function is capable of doing more. But you don't always see that at the moment, because it's not married necessarily to the right hardware. So I think the quality of the hardware is enormously important in the user experience. And it's one of the reasons I think something like the N8 is going to, you know, really show Symbian off in a much better light than some of the earlier devices, because it will, after all, hopefully have a sort of quality that's comparable with, you know, some of the highest end devices. I think we've seen that in some of the things it's capable of doing. You know, the particularly spring to mind for me is sort of the HD out with the Dolby surround sound, something that, you know, you don't really see elsewhere, and that if people want to use it as a killer user experience, all done with sort of the cables out of the box. So yes, I've sort of wandered away from the question a little bit there, but yes, the sort of impact of quality on user experience I think is quite significant. I'll go one of the most important things about sort of assessing a device for me when reviewing it is looking at that. Of course, you do balance that against the other things like cost and availability and, you know, the design, whether you like it, because as Ewan suggested early on, it is incredibly subjective. So to that end, I'll be interested in hearing what David and Ewan think about this.
I'll take up this one as well. The question kind of goes, oh, the N97 was rubbish and the iPhone OS is good. So straight away, it's one of those lovely biased questions that you'd hear John Humphreys use when he's speaking to a Tory minister. But thank you very much. For everybody outside of Britain, go look him up. You thought Dan Rather was heavy. Right then, where were we? You know what? I think it is so personal that it's a tough one to answer. I've been using the X6 now since Christmas, and I used the X6 when it was in the V11 and V12 firmware, and it was atrocious firmware. But the design, the feel of the device in the hand, I loved. But what I loved more was the fact that I'd got that emotional connection with it, and I understood the X6. This is what happens when you've been married a long time. You understand what you're with, and you know how to go around the quirks and get the most out of the other partner in the relationship. And I think it's the same with a mobile phone, except I'd rather have a wife than a mobile phone on a cold winter's night. But there's also the fact that, you know, I'm actually going to go with software in this one. Given the choice, I would prefer software. Because when I was out doing the software challenge in March, and I got the 5230, no Wi-Fi, $150 phone, you know, minimal, it's only 16 million colors in this screen. Oh, that's not a lot. You know, low grade camera, but it was a phone that I knew I could make it sing, I could make it dance. I could take it right to the edge of its capabilities, really use every single ounce of power that it had in it. Okay, it was in a plastic case. It squeaked and creaked a bit. It didn't look fantastic. But as mentioned on the podcast before, when I had to send it back to Rafe, it's like, it was really hard. It's the hardest phone that I've had to return the 5230. And it was a, you know, it's the bottom of the line, low end budget phone, but it had software that could make it sing like a, I was going to sing like a Hairy Angel. David.
Right, I'm Hairy Angel. Okay, I don't think I'll try to follow that one.
I'm yeah. glad.
Hardware, I'll cover first, which because that's the shorter point. I think it's difficult to judge because it's kind of an unfair scale, because if you have like the touch only devices compared to say something like the N97 Mini, which has got an articulating hinge, the more things there are on a piece of hardware, the more things there are to go wrong. So, and of course, materials and build quality all comes into it, but it is easier to make some type of form factors than others. So I think this is a very subjective one. So I'll leave it there. As far as software goes, I think I would definitely would much rather have something that's, rather than looking pretty and has a nice look and feel, something that just keeps working smoothly and doesn't have any hiccups along the way. For example, the N97 going, oops, I've run out of memory again. As Ewan was saying, he had an emotional attachment to his S6 and it was hard to send it back. I've had the same thing with my E72 review unit. It's S63rd edition, so people will say, oh, that's old, outdated and ugly. But it works. It does the job. You know where you are with it, and it never fails to work. And it's always there. It's your workhorse. It's your friend. It's your assistant. It's everything. So I think definitely function before form. Get the function right. Make sure it doesn't keep hiccuping up on you. And probably, again, with hardware, the better the chances are of it going well if it's a simpler form factor.
Yeah, no, I think David hits the nail on the head there. And it's really, in reality, it's a blend of the two. I'd agree with sort of what he was saying. You know, the E72 is kind of my device of choice for most of the time, because it actually blends both quality software and sort of quality hardware into a single device. I think to a certain extent here, with looking specifically at Symbian, there has been an element of, I think, software being held back by the sort of underlying specification. So there's certainly an issue there. Nokia have produced some quite attractive devices. Ewan mentioned how he likes the sort of the feel of the X6 in his hand and the E-series, particularly, you know, the E52 and the E72, and now looking at the N8, there's some pretty attractive hardware design going on. And the N97, for all its faults, you know, was fairly innovative in that department, those hybrid devices. And if you look at something like the C6 as well, and other things coming out on the C5, admittedly at the lower end of the spectrum, but some good hardware. I think there's often a case the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. And so a lot of Nokia owners sort of may look at some of the software innovation that's talked about on Android and iPhone, particularly, I think, with regard to apps. And by contrast, sort of Android and iPhone owners often look at things like the hardware of Nokia in terms of their design prowess, but also, you know, their telephone reception, the aerial engineering, the general build quality of the devices, sort of the robustness and the testing they go through. It's certainly true to say that, you know, you can put through a Nokia device through a lot more abuse than pretty much any other manufacturer, and that they'll survive, as I can sort of testify from having dropped various devices. So as I say, grass is always greener on the other side of the fence in this department, I think. But the reality is, of course, it's a blend of quality both on hardware and on software that in reality will create the very best devices.
Okay, we had a question from a Photo Pro Live coming in, which is quite simply, is FizzWads legit? And I'm like, FizzWads? I mean, it sounds like some strange sort of counting game you use with the Apple co-founder. Turns out it's actually a photo sharing service that allows you to license your photos online. Guys, either of you heard of this before?
No, it's not familiar to me.
David?
And I haven't heard of it either, and I'm looking at the website now.
Yeah. I suspect there's a bit of guerrilla marketing going on here in Photo Pro Life. We just like to promote FizzWads on the podcast. In which case, sir, we salute you, but we have no idea about the site. It looks a nice idea, though. Right then, I think there's one. Let's. Oh, Let's go for the interesting one. Ewan McLeod, a long-time follower of All About Symbian and occasionally the James Allen to Rafe's Martin Brundle. How would America react to Nokia announcing two top-of-the-range Android handsets? With brackets, I'd like serious speculation. Let's break this down into two parts, I think. Rafe, I'll come to you first on this one. First, how would America in general react to seeing Nokia-powered Android handsets? And secondly, what would the business implications be? Let's take that first part first, Rafe.
So business implication, I think the reality is that this won't happen. And this is simply because Nokia is looking to the future and being a software and service company. This is the whole point about the sort of Ovi platform and Nokia's future transformation into what it calls an internet company. And in that respect, Google will be its main competitor. So therefore, I see it as very unlikely that there'll ever be a Nokia Android device in the foreseeable future, simply because Nokia aren't going to be willing to cede that kind of control away to Google in terms of the service layer, which is pretty much required by Android. And they genuinely believe that they can build a better software platform. And certainly, I think if you look at the maturity of something like Symbian, it is more mature and technically capable than Android. A lot of the recent attention has been focused on the UI layer, where Android is clearly developed quite quickly, and particularly also the iPhone comes in here. So I think the business reality of this is it's not going to happen. However, that doesn't mean we can't have a certain amount of interest in this question in terms of the speculation of what would the impact would be, because I think it says rather a lot about Nokia in the American market. So, you know, it's one of those hypothetical questions, but still maybe of interest to the listeners here.
I think the big question would be what would happen to the analysts and what would the American analysts do? Because there's a suspicion that they would go, oh, finally Nokia's in the smartphone business. Oh, we'll start recommending them. We'll start doing that. But it would be such a short-term benefit with a medium and long-term loss. Google have said that they're making around $10 per user per handset per year. Off of Android. So they've got if they've got 10 million Android devices out there, it's $100 million coming in for a bit of free software. That's how much that service layer is worth in through mobile advertising and affiliates and so on to Google. Now, that's what Nokia, that's where the money for Ovi will come through and hit Nokia's bottom line. So Nokia would essentially be handing over all of that money to Google. It would, first of all, it would negate the last 3 or 4 years of pain that they've had. And it would also destroy any sort of long-term strategy they have around the rest of the world. Now, analysts around the rest of the world would probably stop recommending Nokia as a buy because they would have just destroyed the long-term company vision and they would have turned into a box manufacturer that puts in Google's things. And it would just kill them. Would American analysts go, oh, they've destroyed the long-term strategy. Oh, they're finally using Android. They have a stable long-term strategy. I think that the American analysts would go for the latter. And I think that is where the huge educational problem is. The world of smartphones, not the American country of smartphones, the world of smartphones would be a huge loss if Nokia switched over. But America, as with most things, incredibly insular, incredibly inward-looking. You know, you have to be doing something American to succeed. Nokia would be a Finnish company using an American operating system, just like millions of other international companies using an American operating system and giving us our phones. Nokia would do well in America for a year or two. You know, they would get a bit of coverage, but I wouldn't see them, you know, I wouldn't see Verizon choosing them over Motorola. I wouldn't see AT&T choosing them over Apple. I wouldn't see Sprint choosing them over, well, I wouldn't see Sprint choosing anybody at the moment. They're having a huge amount of problems. So they wouldn't even get to the high tier. They'd have maybe a year or two of some nice money and then they would just crash and die.
Yeah, and I broadly agree with what Ewan has said. Just to put a slightly different spin on it, I think it would have a very destabilizing effect on the markets, because whether you like Symbian or love it, which I'll probably say to the American markets more, everybody knows that Nokia is behind Symbian. They have Migo too, but Symbian is what they do. And everyone knows this, and you can count on it. And in the rest of the world, beyond America, it's working very well for them. And they've been spending years with whatever dastardly master plan they have. They've invested lots of time and money into what they're doing. And just to kind of just quickly flip at the end and say, oh, right, we're going to do Android now. yeah, like Ewan said, it will get some. It'll get them like some like quick popular sales, probably in America, for a little while. But in the end, it will actually make whatever people say about them now. It would be concrete evidence to say that they don't know what they're doing if they just suddenly switch to Android now, because everyone's saying that that would be the trendy thing to do. So that's why I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah, no, I would echo what David says. It doesn't fit in with the strategy, as I suggested. It doesn't fit in with the business model. And yes, there might be some short-term benefit. But more than that, I'm not actually sure it would make any difference to Nokia in the US market. I mean, after all, Nokia was kind of the leading smartphone manufacturer before Android came along, before the iPhone came along. And it
and they still are.
And they still are. But they weren't doing very well in the States then. And I'm not sure Android would necessarily make any difference. So even when, you know, Nokia was sort of really top dog in terms of what was available, you know, it was beaten by Windows Mobile and Palm in the US market, which I think partly reflects the US market is rather different in terms of what it looks for in smartphones. Now, there's an interesting question. Android is clearly having a lot of momentum in the high end of the market, also outside the States. I would agree with what the guys have said here, that the US is its main market in one sense. But I think this question would be most interesting if you look forward 6 months ahead, or maybe 12 months ahead, when we will have the MeeGo devices and the Symbian 4 devices out on the market. And at that point, I think this kind of the gap, or the perceived software gap, will be much less. And it'll be really interesting to see how Nokia gets on, particularly with MeeGo, but also with Symbian 4 in the US market going forward. I think this sort of question is given sort of currency, or given even a degree of sort of serious answer by the fact that, you know, Symbian probably quite correctly is perceived to be in a bad place at the high end of the market. But as David suggests, they have got a concrete plan going forward. And, you know, doing anything with Android would make them look like headless chickens, quite apart from being very bad from a, you know, long-term business point of view. And I think, you know, with brands like this, Nokia wouldn't be able to reverse it simply by switching software platform. I think a good bit of evidence to this is that in America, the Droid brand of Motorola has better recognition than Android as a whole. And so people would probably still regard Nokia as that company that makes cheap flip phones that everybody has just for doing voice calls on. It's not known as a smartphone company, and that's not something that can change overnight or can be solved by a simple platform switch, even leaving aside all the sort of business etc. arguments. So I think it's going to be a, you know, a long way back for Nokia in the US, and it's going to be as part of its wider strategy, which, as David rightly elucidated, is Symbian and MeeGo based with Qt as the unifying layer, as we keep repeating over and over again in the podcast. And one sense, I think, you know, serious speculation about Android and Nokia switching to it, which you do get from a lot of US analysts, probably just speaks for them not really understanding Nokia as a company and their strategy going forward, and dare I say it's the mobile as a whole. And I think it's interesting you are now getting a few people, including some who saw this question come through on Twitter, saying, actually, I don't want Nokia to switch because we need the diversity in the market. And I think that's absolutely true as well. But more than anything else, I think Nokia still believe that they have the better strategy going forward. And it's difficult to argue with them when they maintain their level of market share pretty much against everybody else, with maybe the exception of Samsung and LG, have also increased their market share over the last decade, and have been very successful in mobile. The one fly in the ointment has been this high-end smartphone space, which you might say, unfortunately for Nokia, is the most visible. But it does seem that they are on the edge of, you know, correcting that problem. Although, as we mentioned very heavily in the last podcast, that's going to depend on execution. So a long way from the question, but I think a really interesting discussion there.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the Allied forces in World War II in October, November 1941, essentially just before Pearl Harbor and everything. Pearl Harbor was 1941, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes, good. Otherwise, I would have looked like David Cameron there. And I'm specifically the Siege of Tobruk. And this is where the Allied forces were in Tobruk, surrounded by Rommel, surrounded by all the other forces. Germany's completely on the ascendancy, sorry, the Axis forces are completely on the ascendancy. And everybody's saying, oh, just surrender, you know, make peace, that's fine. Quite a lot of people were calling for that. And, you know, America were kind of helping but not doing stuff. Then all of a sudden, yeah, Rommel gets repelled at Tobruk. There various stuff happens during 1941 with the offensive of the RAF over Germany, and suddenly Britain starts looking like a winner again. Then America gets attacked and comes into the war. Point is, America loves association with winners. If Nokia were to release even one Android handset, even as a little experiment, I don't think America would perceive them as winners. I think America, the American side, would not allow them to go, oh, no. I think America would simply go, okay, stay there. Have your cheap Android handsets. We'll get them in from HTC, from ZTE, from various other Chinese box manufacturers. It's just wrong on all sort of levels. So, the other Ewan, if Nokia were to announce those Android handsets, I think they would essentially be throwing in the towel. And given that they've bet the company, that would be a bad time to throw in the towel. This is Kudron and Rafe.
I was just going to say, I'm going to officially apologise to our listeners for Ewan's very dodgy analogy there. We'll try and improve on that in future weeks.
Oh, we'll try. I don't think we're going to go anywhere. Right then, let's stay with a sort of related question. Now, James Berlin pops up. How should Nokia advertise the N8 in the mainstream media?
I think we should have a dual approach, because the N8 has got the obvious feature of its camera. It's going to be a fantastic camera, probably better than a lot of quick shot, 40, 60 pound point and shoots. So there's that to go on. That will attract a lot of people. But also, it has a lot of kind of hidden features, like the ability to plug in USB drives, plug it into your TV, use a USB keyboard. You can almost use it as a little like net-top computer. Almost. Not quite. But that is not stuff that will come across well on the shop shelves. So, as I say, I think use a dual approach. Push the camera, push all the other quirky features it's got.
I think they need to push an emotional connection rather than a spec list. Spec lists are great when you're at the start of a revolution. I think I talked briefly in the podcast previously. It's got really great camera. It's got really great. Well, you know, most phones nowadays have stuff that's above average. They need to somehow create the feeling of, I want this. I want this to be cool. Well, they need something like the Marlboro Man, you know, or the guy who stood under this streetlight, lit a cigarette and went, you're never alone with the players. It never said anything about the cigarette. It never said it was poisonous and dangerous or made you feel nice. It went, that's something I want. What Nokia needs is a strategy that makes people go, that phone is something I want. Now, that could be from marketing, that could be from celebrities, that could be from a very well-executed emotional advertising campaign, such as Apple has been using. You notice Apple is essentially only advertising FaceTime on the iPhone 4 because it creates an emotional connection between two people, and it's saying, look, the iPhone 4 can create emotion. So Nokia need a way to do that. And, you know, Nokia's finished image does leave them a bit of a trouble here, because the Finns are very noted for having that single tone of voice, even when, say, their driver has won the World Formula One Racing Driver Championships. So it's very hard for them to get out of that sort of cliched look of what Nokia is and get it into that emotional context. By all means, make sure the geeks know about the NHD, the HD output, the 12 megapixel camera phone, but that is not going to sell more than a handful of phones on the scale of continents and the world. They need to have something sharper and deeper, and if I knew what that was, I would be a very rich man.
This is an interesting question. I'm not a marketing person or an expert in that department, so it's difficult to come up with something. I would just note that, you know, Nokia has a different perception in different parts of the world, which would suggest to me you might need to advertise this differently in different parts of the world. I would agree with what David said. I think the imaging is a major aspect of it here, and I think you can really go to town on that, especially if you combine it in with the kind of, if you like, the personal video recorder features, the ability to, you know, play back that video on the TV out. So a certain amount of technology speak. And I think what Nokia may need to do, particularly in the markets where it's better known, is to show that the N8 is really something different, you know, to really go to town on, you know, this is the next step from Nokia, this is the next device. And they, I think, tried to do this, and in one sense were quite successful with the N97, the level of expectation around that was pretty high, and then it was disappointing. So they need to achieve a similar thing with the N8, because I think this time around it genuinely is quite a different device in terms of the performance and the software. There are a lot of changes in the N8, and I think that's sort of quite obvious to see from some of the hype around it. You know, people are really anticipating this handset. but I would agree with what Ewan said about the need for the emotional connection. I'm not sure that the sort of showing off the handset in the way that the iPhone and Apple traditionally does will necessarily work for Nokia with the N8. I mean, in one sense, this is going to be an aspirational phone for a lot of Nokia users, and that probably needs to be reflected in the advertising. But also, as a whole, I think Nokia should probably emphasize that this is a very rounded device in terms of, you know, it does have the social networking features, it has the, you know, the video editor, it has some of the features that are kind of on the cutting edge, and indeed out of the box, it's probably going to be one of the most feature-packed devices that money can buy. You know, the value element, I guess, could also come in. But, you know, emphasize the fact you're giving away free maps and navigation with this device, as you're doing for all the other things, especially because that can then probably tie in with a more general Nokia messaging campaign and show the device, because it's a nice looking device and it is a departure from the usual Nokia devices with a kind of unibody aluminium frame. And so, you know, when you're doing any kind of advertising, and I think this is sometimes something Nokia suffers from, you know, put the product front and center, you know, make it the star of the show rather than something that's a bit more subliminal, maybe, which I think works for Nokia a lot of the time because everyone knows Nokia makes mobile phones and it's sort of, ooh, what's this Nokia advert about? But on this particular occasion, I think it is all about the device in terms of the looks, with the secondary message that actually it's all about the software, because that's increasingly true on mobile phones. And so, you know, showing it in real use, you know, the way it can create the emotional connection, maybe that's the way to go. But it'll be interesting to see what comes up in terms of advertising. We've seen a few you know, sort of trailers and things on YouTube, but I suspect there's going to be a pretty enormous commercial advertising campaign behind this once it is available in the shops.
Right then, one last question, I think, from Big Brother on this one. Gives us a little bit of an emotional downer at the end of the podcast, but here we go. The server situation at Nokia, I'm assuming, is always breaking during downloads. Would appreciate if you guys can talk about QA of Nokia core applications. I have lots of friends who cannot use core Nokia apps like OV Store, Nokia Messaging, because they're buggy. Things need to improve in that regard. Apps that Nokia ship with the products should just work and work very well. Refer you, Big, to the answer we gave at the start of the reader's questions, which is Nokia should ship the N8 when it's ready. But I suspect it goes deeper than that, because in any big electrical engineering project, there's a point where you have to ship, and there will be stuff that you ship without, but you know, that you will know that there are bugs in there. You just have to ship and fix the bugs later. And I know that that's happened previously with the Symbian devices, Rafe.
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, in terms of quality assurance, I think Nokia has probably dropped the ball a couple of times on software. To a certain extent, with these, you know, things like Ovi Store, there are missing features, but there comes a point at which, you know, you have to ship something and then say, I will add in the features later. And that's become increasingly common in the Web 2.0 world, you know, ship something, get it going. I think there's also a rather subjective element to this. I mean, Nokia Messaging in particular, I know it's got its critics out there in terms of things not working. It's always worked perfectly for me. The most recent versions in particular I found very stable. The sort of multiple inbox support and sort of push email on any consumer account is something, you know, I value greatly. I think that's reflected in the success it's had in terms of operator sign-up. But yes, there's, of course, there's room for improvement. And I think what was the way it was put, that products should just work and work very well. Yes, it's easy to say that. It's much harder to implement in practice. You look at something like Ovi Maps, there's much fewer complaints about that. There are indeed some out there. I wouldn't dispute that. But in terms of the sort of prevalence of them, and that's because people tend to complain when they have a problem. And Ovi Maps has some pretty good net recruiter stores. That's sort of a measure of how much people would recommend it to other people. So almost unprecedented in the sort of the mobile service world. And that's because it's a great product that's available at a great price, and people like it a lot. And that's what Nokia, I guess, need to aim for on every product. But, you know, it isn't possible to create the ideal experience from version one. And Ovi, in terms of service, is still relatively young. You know, the Ovi store has only just had its first birthday. And the amount of effort and engineering that goes into this, I think Nokia is only just beginning to get an appreciation for, in some senses, and that's, you know, reflected in the fact in the last year it sort of rebuilt its server architecture in the back end and brought in specialists to enable it to do that. And it does, you know, sort of appreciate it's got its fight on its hand, but the benefits will never be immediate. But I think Yeah, I mean, yes, the answer to this question is yes, there are problems, and Nokia is most definitely aware of them. But, you know, introducing a fix to them is not a snap your fingers, make it better. You know, just say we need to ship quality doesn't, you know, it doesn't happen. The, it goes back, I guess, to the execution question. But I am sort of confident that this will improve over time. I think Nokia Messenger is a great example of that. The first version, you know, text only, it did have a tendency to break for some people. Again, it didn't actually do that for me, but it's a lot more stable than it used to be. It's got more feature rich. Similarly, with the Ovi Store, the first version was almost laughably bad in some senses. And since then, it's been iterated, I think, 7 or 8 times now. To the extent, you know, it's a lot more stable, and I think people complain about it far more than it sometimes deserves. You know, things like being able to install things silently in the background, people don't remark on that because it's a feature that just works. You know, they talk instead about the range of content. Not a lot Nokia can do about that, and maybe, you know, subscription billing or in-app billing, and that's something that's on the roadmap. A big one is upgrades. Again, that's on the roadmap. I'll be very pleased to see that come in and sort of re-downloads of applications that got introduced. And so this is something that improves over time. So it's interesting. I mean, I would give Ovi as a whole a sort of moderate report card at the moment, but it'll be interesting to see how Nokia can improve that over the next year. But, I, you know, this is vital to the future of the company. So absolutely, they are working on it and they need to work on it harder.
Yeah, there's a, if you get the chance, Big Brother, have a look at David Wood's book, Symbian for Software Leaders. There's a whole sections and paragraphs on man management, project management, and how to ship without bugs. And it goes into far more depth than we ever could in the podcast from someone that's been there on multiple products. So I would recommend that if you want to learn more. Not much more time for recommendations. We are had a lot of questions coming in there, more kept coming in as the podcast going through. So we shall call it there. You can get in touch with us. Details as before. Top of the podcast, all about Symbian.com, all the Twitters, all the handles, and stuff like that. It only remains for me to raise a glass of congratulations to Liechtenstein, who will be entering Eurovision in 2011. David, your new career as a wedding photographer, I understand.
Yes, I wrote a fun article on All About Symbian this week, just along the lines of some N82 nostalgia called Never Too Old for a Wedding. So if there's any N82 fans, go and have a read.
Of course, Rafe is heading out now to the N8 developer launch event in central London. Rafe, do you think you're going to find out anything new about the handset?
Well, I think this is a developer-focused event, so we'll probably have more on the cute story and hopefully a chance to see the N8, and I'll be able to make an assessment of how the software situation is getting on as we go toward launch. And that was one of the Twitter questions we had in from Asri Albacker. Thanks for sending that in, Asri. And yes, we will be at the event and I will be reporting back live. That's coming up next Tuesday, so the day after this podcast goes live.
Indeed, we shall have a full report on that event and all the happenings in the Symbian world coming to you on the All About Symbian Insight podcast next week. We might even resuscitate Steve Litchfield from the zombified state that we have left him in somewhere as he realizes he's been out of the house for more than 2 nights. And oh, look, the sky. But for now, it only remains for me to thank my guest, David Gilson.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
And Rafe Blandford.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
And for you all out there listening, this is the All About Symbian Insight podcast. Catch you next week. Ta-ra.